T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Welcome to Special Edition, a weekly look at the issues in the news and the personalities shaping the stories. Special Edition is a production of Intercom Communications.
Welcome to Special Edition. Thanks for joining us. I'm Paula Dagnan. Today, we're going to start off by meeting Tanya Verkaitis. She is the executive director of the Lackawanna County Medical Society. They have some exciting programs coming up that they hope you'll join them. Let me start off by having you just tell us, because a lot of people might not even know that there is a Lackawanna County Medical Society. What do they do?
Right. The Lackawanna County Medical Society has been around for quite some time. Basically, it is made up of member physicians, and what they do is provide education to physicians and other healthcare providers, as well as the community.
And when you talk about that, is it just for the physicians, or, you know, you talk about the community. So how does all this come together when people may only see their doctors when they go to the office if they have a problem?
Right, exactly. So some of the things that we've done to support the community is we've offered a public health education series for the past couple of years where we're interviewing physicians, sometimes their patients as well, and televising that on ECTV, and it's also housed on our YouTube channel. We also do an annual medical legal conference, which is open to the public. We've done some other small activities for the public with screenings and such, but this year we're really changing things up with our public health education series, which we've retitled Mind Body Wellness, with the goal of actually impacting the lives of people in the community and partnering with local organizations that are doing things that help to improve the health of people.
Well, first of all, let's go back and talk about the fact that you're on YouTube. How do we find you?
You can just look up our YouTube channel. It's Lackawanna County Medical Society, and you'll see past episodes of these interviews with physicians and other people in the community.
And then you also said on ECTV, is there a certain time? Because, again, a lot of people might be able to look it up on their guide and find out.
Right. So we used to air on Sunday evenings. We have not chosen what time we'll air this year because we used to do monthly programming. But this year, because we want folks to actually try these different programs, we're doing quarterly programming. So it gives us a month of activity with people in the community that will then air in that program.
How exciting! Where do we get to meet the physicians, and what do you have coming up as far as topics?
So this year, we're going to start off with a partnership with Steamtown Hot Yoga. We're kicking off February 19th. It will be a 30-day program that's designed to equip participants with a simple set of powerful tools that can help them create a path to healthier, happier lives. So besides an actual 3 times a week yoga training program, we're also offering them an online life design program. So this first group of people are going to be interviewed at the beginning of their program, and then we'll talk to them again at the end to see how it's impacted and changed their lives. And we've had about, I'm going to say 15 people apply thus far, but we're only awarding it to 5.
Oh, wow. Now that sounds like something people can really get into. Now you said you've already had 15 people apply for that. So you're just starting off? Are there going to be more things like this that will be coming in the near future?
Yes. Definitely. So the next quarter, we're going to focus on running, We were thinking about the fact that the Steamtown Marathon happened in the fall, and we thought, okay, spring, people start running, they're thinking about possibly participating, so how can we support these people? But the goal is to actually get people who are non-runners to participate as well. And that's our ideal demographic, sort of, right? Like, maybe there's people who ran in the past, but they no longer run, or someone who's been thinking about it, but they're afraid. So how can we get these people out, encourage them, get them to be a part of something bigger, building that community, right? So you have a support network, and then hopefully they'll change their lives and, you know, get a little healthier because of it.
Now, does the Lackawanna County Medical Society have a place to meet? Or, as you mentioned, the fact that you're going to be doing the yoga at a place that's already established doing yoga. Mm-hmm. So, for example, when you talk about the upcoming getting involved with the runners, will that be something at another location, or is there a central location?
Yes. So with each of these activities, we really want to tap into things that already exist in the community. First of all, why recreate the wheel, right? But secondly, there are so many people that already offer great programs. So for instance, we're also going to talk about diabetes later in the year, prevention and maintenance. There's great programs through the Y and other folks that are already out there, and a lot of them are free. So it's helping us let folks know what's out there, having our physicians give some background information that helps people out, but then also tapping into those resources that exist and hopefully giving them a little bit of visibility as well.
So when someone sees that the Lackawanna County Medical Society is going to be involved, does that mean that there won't be a charge? There will be a charge? Because, again, you're bringing people out from the community. Can they just come and ask questions? It's a veritable goldmine of information.
Exactly. So there is no charge. And I failed to mention earlier that we did get a generous grant from the Northeast Pennsylvania Healthcare Foundation, which helps to support these programs. So the funding from that will actually pay for these students to attend yoga for 30 days. As we move forward with our other programming, in partnership with whatever organizations that we want to work with, they'll help sponsor students as well. So Steamtown Hot Yoga did cover half the cost of these five people that will attend for the next 30 days. So that was very generous of them as well. But a lot of programs are also free, and people just don't realize that.
Well, that's one way to definitely introduce them, plus be able to maybe see some familiar faces if you're getting
exactly.
local physicians that are going to be involved as well. What about as far as the future is concerned? Now, there could be some of our listeners hearing this for the first time and saying, well, mm-hmm. she's already mentioned yoga, she's mentioned running, she's mentioned diabetes. I'd really like to have a program on, and what do they do with that question?
They contact me. So the best thing to do would be to email me, and I can be reached at info@luzernemedsoc. We do lots of things with the Luzerne Medical Society is too, so we're kind of, I wear two hats. But you can also check our Facebook page. So if you look up Lackawanna County Medical Society on Facebook, you'll find our page. You'll see what events we have coming up, like our first Friday Sprint and Health Fair. But there you can also message. And I would guess that's probably the easiest way to go. Most people are on Facebook, right?
Usually. And again, as far as the, that's an easy address to remember as far mm-hmm. as your email address. And you said you have other events coming up. And again, we're talking about, I know the yoga has five people, but are you hopefully hoping to expand and maybe even invite more members to attend maybe a lecture or a presentation of some type or another?
Definitely. With this first one, we really wanted to start off small just to get a feel for it because it's the first time that we're doing this. But as we move forward, I think there is the ability to have more folks, especially for something like running that's outdoors, right? There's really no limit to that. Although we'll have to cap it somewhere. The same with the diabetes programming. A lot of those, there are limits and they have particular start dates. But in terms of introducing people to the programming and just letting them know what's available, that could definitely be, you know, a lecture that happens one evening. And then we can invite the community at large, have different community resources come in and talk about their programs, even though we may only highlight one during our series.
Now, before I let you go, is there anything that I've missed or anything that you want to make sure that you get across to our audience? And once again, maybe just especially how to get in touch with you.
Definitely. I would say the best place to look for us is Facebook. I always post our events and our happenings, plus any of the community partners that we work with would be sharing events there as well. So look there for us, for starters. And from there, you can find the link to our website and such. But if you wanted to send me an email, you can email me at info@luzernmedsoc, that's short for medical society, .org, or you can call us at 570-344-3616.
Thanks once again to Tanya Verkaitis, Executive Director of the Lackawanna County Medical Society, for joining us today on Special Edition. Now, don't go away. When we come back, in Harrisburg, they're talking about raising the minimum wage. We'll find out more when Special Edition returns. Welcome back to Special Edition. The budget in Harrisburg has started to be discussed. One of the big topics has been raising the minimum wage. Intercom's Nikki Stone caught up with Alex Harper of the Pennsylvania Chamber of Business and Industry to find out their opinion on the topic.
Alex Halper, you're with the PA Chamber of Business. Hi, Alex. How are you today?
I'm doing well, Nikki. Thanks for having me on.
Thank you. Now, you have done, there's been some research done by the PA Department of Business to see how raising minimum wage has actually affected other states. Am I correct?
Well, we have heard, as I'm sure many have, perspectives from other states that have attempted this, and it's played out sort of exactly as we hear it would, which is some people certainly do benefit, other people are harmed, whether it means hours are reduced or their job is eliminated altogether. If you're a small business owner, and you don't have the capacity to expand your labor costs that significantly, then you're certainly harmed by it. So it's, as always, it's a mixed bag.
I think one of the states that was mentioned, Michigan, was it? Was it Michigan?
Well, we've seen, different minimum wage debates occur, all over the country. And, it's sort of unfortunate. We get into this very standard political debate about the minimum wage. And at the end of the day, again, some people benefit, some people are harmed. But we always hear about the need to do this because if you're, for example, we hear about a single mom in Pennsylvania can't raise a family earning the minimum wage. And, I think there is broad agreement that someone in that situation needs lawmakers working on policies to assist them and to help lift them up. What you often don't hear is that when you look at who's earning the minimum wage in Pennsylvania, less than 1% are single moms. Over 93%, and this is according to state data, 93% of minimum wage earners don't have children. We think that lawmakers need to have a much more thoughtful, strategic approach to how do you target support to those individuals without triggering some of the negative impacts on employment that we've seen, both in Pennsylvania in the past, but also around the country.
Right. Well, and what kind of negative have you seen in the past, I guess, is one of the questions I want to ask. Like these small businesses just going belly up because they can't...
Well, Yeah. Well, you know, and I've challenged advocates for the most recent proposal, not only, you know, increasing the current minimum wage by more than 60% in just a few months, and then ultimately more than double. But the proposal also, and this is important, the proposal does away with the tipped wage, and that's a system where everyone is always guaranteed the minimum wage, but for restaurants, for example, they can utilize tips to ensure that the minimum wage is met. For restaurants, if you do away with the tipped wage as is being proposed, that's an over 235% increase to what are usually entry-level wages. And I would challenge advocates for this proposal. You know, go to your neighborhood restaurant, go to your coffee shop, ask them if they're prepared to increase entry-level wages by 235% in just a few months. There is just a complete disconnect between some of these, you know, sort of feel-good policies that are proposed in Harrisburg and sort of the realities on the ground for Pennsylvania employers.
Well, I know a lot of people who choose to be in a server's position because with the tips, they actually end up making out way better per hour. I mean, there are some places that are slower, but I also know restaurant owners that they'd be serving people themselves. They'd be trying to cook and serve people themselves because they are not bringing in that kind of cash to pay out that kind of money for a server to sit there like that.
You're correct. These are, you know, these are operations that, you know, on average operate on very thin profit margins. And again,
if they had to raise the menu items, they're going to lose customers because who's going to be able to afford to eat at a restaurant that's paying a server $15 an hour?
Right. We've heard in other states that have eliminated the tipped wage option of restaurants prohibiting tips. If you have to pay a server $15 an hour, to your point, you have to raise the cost of items on your menu so significantly just to make up the difference that you're going to lose customers already, and some of the most aggressive pushback has come from the servers themselves, who have benefited better from a system where they could earn tips. And under this, it just does not. It doesn't. The numbers don't crunch if you're the average restaurant owner in Pennsylvania.
I mean, I know at some decent restaurants you can walk out, and this is in Northeast PA, with $300 a night if you're doing a good job. Sometimes more, when just on tips. You know, if you break that down and you're making minimum wage now, even at $15 an hour, and you only put in a 5-hour shift, somehow it doesn't work. The math doesn't compute for the server. Because I know people are going to say, but still, they should be paid. And people just don't seem to understand that. And I think restaurants, if that's the case, it's going to affect them more than any other business. I mean, I already know you could walk into Walmart right now and make $11 an hour.
Yeah.
And all you to be a greeter.
Yeah, I think if you look at many of the sort of national corporations, their entry level wages have gone up considerably over the years, and an increase of this extent. I mean, you're talking about ultimately within a few years, an over 500% increase in the entry level wages for what you would pay for a server. Again, this may not necessarily put Starbucks out of business, but go to your local coffee shop and ask that the owner whether, you know, he or she is ready to expand their labor costs that dramatically, and they're going to tell you, you know, only in Harrisburg can that kind of be thought of as an actual feasible public policy that's going to help individuals. It was interesting. There's been a lot of talk with freshman congresswoman out of New York, Ocasio-Cortez, and she tweeted recently how she heard her a coffee shop where she had worked was going out of business, so she visited to say hi to her former boss and say farewell. Well, the boss was asked later by the media why he was closing down, and he said two things. He said rents are going up, and he said New York's minimum wage increase basically made it impossible for him to accommodate those labor costs, and he had to shut down. So, I think it's just one of those situations where I'm not questioning the intentions of advocates behind this legislation and behind these proposals. I think they do want to help people, but this disconnect between these proposals written on paper and how it plays out in the real world, that's where we hope we can bring some awareness to the impact on employers.
Okay, can you hold on a minute? We need to go to break, but we'll be back and have a couple more questions before you have to go.
Sure.
All right. Thanks, Alex. Hold on 1 minute. We're going to be back with traffic and weather together in a few. Nikki Stone sitting in for Frank Andrews on WILK News Radio. Your WILK News Radio. And we are talking about raising a minimum wage with Alex Halper. He's from the PA Chamber of Business. Now, I found on your website where it said if an increase in the state's minimum wage goes to $10.10 an hour, that could lead to the loss of 31,000 Pennsylvanian jobs. Where did they come up with that number? And do you know?
Sorry about that, Nikki. That figure came from the state's independent fiscal office, which at the time was analyzing the proposal, which, as you said, was $10.10, and estimated, I think it was maybe around 33, but right in that range of 33 or so thousand jobs lost, fewer jobs in the economy as a result of that. Of increasing the minimum wage to that level. So, of course, if the number is now 12 and ultimately 15, that number would almost certainly be higher.
A little bit higher. So there will be jobs lost, and we think because either businesses won't be able to employ as many people and they'll have to do cutbacks, or because they go belly up.
Yeah, that's just the reality, and that doesn't account for if you're a small business, let's say you own a restaurant and you're thinking about expanding to another location, all of a sudden this mandate comes down and you have to recalculate the numbers, and it may not work. So that there are broader impacts than what can be specifically calculated by whether it's the independent fiscal office at the state level or the congressional budget office at the federal level, which did a similar analysis and found they expected 500,000 jobs nationally, up to 1 million jobs lost at $10.10. So these are not figures from the PA chamber. This is not the business community crying that the sky is falling. These are nonpartisan, independent economists who predict these outcomes from this policy.
Now, I'm still trying. I had a story sitting here talking about lumber yards and places that have gone out of business in other states because of the minimum. And it really was a big deal. It really wasn't good for their states overall. I mean, on the surface, it sounds good. Oh, it's $15 or $12 is what we're talking about initially, but still. But it's not... it's not as good as it sounds up front.
These things are far more complicated than can ever be conveyed in sort of the five second sound bite that sort of advocates make it out to be. Again, I think there's broad consensus that for low income Pennsylvanians, single parents raising children, of course we need to have a strategy. We need to have policies to provide those individuals better opportunities and to help them. But I think there has to be recognition while minimum wage you know, this was a New Deal era policy that was intended to help those you know, primary breadwinners for families. But over the decades and over the years, as the demographics have evolved and the economy has changed, that's just not the case anymore. You're talking a much younger population in these jobs generally. You're talking individuals without children. So let's figure out ways to actually target support to the individuals that we all believe ought to be helped. Because I tell you, when those 33,000 jobs are reduced, there's a good chance it's going to be a lot of the same people that everyone says they want to help, and now all of a sudden they're out of a job.
Right, exactly. I mean, and some people think that, you know, the vast majority of people working for minimum wage are working for these large corporations, and that's not true. The vast majority of people making minimum wage are working for smaller companies.
That's right. It is smaller employers, and that's who we're hearing from now, who have very serious concerns about this proposal, and they can even begin to accommodate it.
Now, I see, even in New York State, where the minimum wage is $11.10 an hour, if you cross the border up from the Endless Mountains region of PA and you go across the border, they have signs up that they hire people to work at their fast food chains at $15 an hour. Mm-hmm. And their minimum wage is $11, and so they're not even paying, and here they're not paying minimum wage either. They're already paying above minimum wage, so I don't know where we're going to get with this. And most of these wages, or even anything under 15 right now, is hard to live on based on our rents. Based on our, and I'm thinking Northeast PA, our cost of living is lower than it would be in Harrisburg or Philadelphia even, and it's mm-hmm. difficult here, but I don't think raising minimum wage is going to be the savior to solving this problem. We need better jobs brought in to our areas.
I would agree with you. I think over the years and decades, you know, advocates on supporting this have done a good job of creating this false choice of, you know, do you want to help low-income families, and therefore you have to support, you know, dramatic increases to the minimum wage. And I think it's just necessary to call out that false choice and just make it clear that there are other options.
In the long run, when they raise the wage to $15 an hour, PA gets more in their pocket due to taxes coming out from the higher wage. Mm-hmm. And they're the only ones that are making out. The government.
Yeah.
All right. Alex, I appreciate your time. Thank you, Alex. Have a great day.
Thank you.
Take care.
Thanks for having me.
Now, don't go away. There's still more Special Edition yet to come. Welcome back to Special Edition. It is February, and February, among other things, is Heart Month. And that just doesn't mean because it was Valentine's Day this week. Dawn Webster is a physician's assistant and assistant director of MedExpress in Pittsburgh, and she has some very good things for us to remember about keeping our heart healthy. Well, it is February, and Dawn, February is the month of heart, being Valentine's Day, but it's also the month of heart for taking care of heart healthy. How do we go about doing that?
So there's multiple things you can do to make sure your heart stays healthy. Some of the biggest ones are exercise and a healthy diet.
So when we talk about things such as exercise, I guess, you know, a lot of people will say it's winter time now, but as soon as the spring gets here, I'm going to go out and I'm going to start to run and jog and work in the yard. But is that necessarily a good thing?
Well, if you've never done it before, you absolutely want to start slow. But it's actually important to stay active even in the winter. So even if it's just, you know, pulling up a video online or an old DVD, an exercise DVD, and just getting active in your living room, even that would help.
When we're talking about heart as well, One of the things, of course, that a lot of people are doing at this time of the year in different parts of the country is shoveling snow, removing ice, and sometimes that can be a little bit scary. What are some of the warning signs that maybe your heart is trying to tell you something?
Sure. So anytime that you experience chest pain or shortness of breath, that is a giant red flag that something may be going on. And it could be something as little as just being out of shape to something as serious as a heart attack. So the biggest warning signs, especially for men, are the chest pain, the shortness of breath. Now, women, on the other hand, they don't experience those same, you know, standard symptoms that everyone thinks about. When they're having an issue with their heart, sometimes they just have some nausea, some fatigue. They just don't feel right. They don't always have the stereotypical chest pain.
I've heard that, and I've also heard that sometimes when women are experiencing a heart attack, again, not only the symptoms of something coming on, but even a heart attack, we hear about the pain in the arm and different things like that. So are there other things that women need to be concerned about?
Sure. So women can have, and men also, can have symptoms like jaw pain or arm pain or even back pain. Any of those could be a sign of a heart attack. And then when it comes to things like stroke, it may be as simple as when they smile, you know, one side of their face just doesn't, you know, quite go up like it used to, or their speech kind of sounds a little funny. What, so, there's many things to look for.
What role does blood pressure play in taking care of your heart and keeping your heart healthy?
Well, it depends. So people can have blood pressure issues untreated for years and years and years, and it does put some stress on their heart. But if it's just a very mild high blood pressure, a lot of times it doesn't cause as much damage as you would think. However, if it's very high, it can actually result in organ damage. So it can put stress on your kidneys, on your brain, on your heart. I mean, it can, if it's really high and it goes untreated for a long time, it actually can do a lot of damage.
When we're talking about, again, blood pressure, because it all kind of goes together, and you mentioned right in the very beginning of our chat here about diet, are there things that we should be maybe treating more with respect as when we're talking about putting food into our body than some other things in order to keep our blood pressure at the right level as well as keeping our heart healthy?
Sure. So blood pressure is more dependent on the sodium in your diet. So if you eat a lot of sodium, a lot of preserved foods, those have tons of salt in them, and that can absolutely increase your blood pressure. When you're looking at heart health, it's looking more at the healthy fats versus the non-healthy fats. So avocado, for example, has a lot of fat in it, but it's a good fat. It's actually good for you. Whereas the, fat from butter and a lot of the things we cook with, that's not so good for you. That's, you know, the saturated fats. Those are the ones that are actually bad for you, and they clog your arteries.
And Dawn, to wrap up just a little bit more about heart, what would you say then are the things that people, I know you mentioned in the beginning, the exercise, the diet, things like that. What would you say would be the things that people should really keep in mind when they're trying to keep their heart healthy?
Sure. So one of the biggest things that we didn't really touch on yet is following up with your doctor. If you haven't had your cholesterol screened in a couple years, that's absolutely something you need to do. Even if you are healthy as can be and eat a wonderful diet, if you have bad genetics, you can have high cholesterol and high blood pressure. It doesn't matter how healthy you are. If those genetics are bad, you're going to have, you know, you're going to have to go on medicine. So that's something you really need to worry about if you haven't had it done yet.
Is there an age that you should start really giving your heart more thought than just whether it's going to be broken after Valentine's Day is over?
Actually, in childhood, you know, really, especially if you have a high family history of heart disease, heart attacks, high blood pressure, strokes, those are things that even in your teens, they're going to start looking at. They're going to start screening you for those things. So there really is no too early of an age.
Dawn Webster, Physician's Assistant and Assistant Director of MedExpress in Pittsburgh, with some very good advice there about keeping our heart healthy. Do you know someone who is a champion for children in the Commonwealth? Angela Little, President and CEO of Family Support Alliance, would like to have your nomination. You can do that by sending it to pa-fsa.org. Angela also has a brand new program to tell us about. She's joining us now on Special Edition.
That time of year, and at Pennsylvania Family Support Alliance, we really like to honor and acknowledge the work of folks throughout Pennsylvania who do small and large acts that help keep kids safe. So it's time, we're in the midst of our Pennsylvania Blue Ribbon Champion for Safe Kids campaign, and we're seeking nominations for members of the community who could be volunteers. They could be professionals who work with kids. And then this is one that you should certainly like, Paula, a member of the media. Someone who has kept kids and their safety foremost in the minds of others and who've gone above and beyond, really, for child protection.
So what are you looking for exactly? Are you looking for a person? Are you looking for an organization, possibly?
Yeah, we're looking for individuals. And then, of course, with the media, we're looking for a company that has, you know, really kept child abuse prevention foremost for their viewership. So with the individuals, we're searching for two volunteers and two professionals who work in the field of child welfare or with children and families. So it could be someone who, you know, shows up as a CASA volunteer and works really hard on rough cases that look out for the kids' best interest. It could be a teacher who does things that are not required of their job, but helps with kids and their activities after school. Or, you know, there's really a large variety. Last year, we had a woman who was in her 80s. And she volunteered at a local parent support and education program, facilitating that support group every week. Imagine being in your mid-80s and doing that.
Wow.
So there's lots of good folks in Pennsylvania. There's lots of people who care about kids. And this is just our opportunity to come together with elected officials, members of the media, corporate, nonprofit partners, and give them recognition.
And this is throughout the entire Commonwealth.
Throughout the entire Commonwealth. And so we're asking folks to go online to pablueribbonchampions.org, and they'll see a nominate there. To fill that out, it's really easy. It doesn't take much time. It doesn't cost anything. And that comes back into us. It can be emailed. It's very easy. And then we have a panel of judges, independent folks from our organization, that will review all the nominations, and they'll select the award winners. And then that's unveiled at our big event, which is on April 3rd at 10:30 a.m. at the Capitol in the main rotunda.
Oh, in Harrisburg.
In
so
Harrisburg.
You're going to bring everybody together.
We bring everyone together, and it is truly an uplifting time. We have local school students who provide a good part of the program. We have a special kind of tribute to the children who were killed due to child abuse, 40 last year, so that's a pretty high number. And so we have lots of folks who come together and to pause for a few minutes and remember those young lives that were lost. And then it's a time, too, for us all to recommit ourselves, to dedicate ourselves to doing better for Pennsylvania's children.
Let's talk a little bit about that as well. The Families in Recovery.
Mm-hmm.
What is that?
Well, we, of course, know what we've had lately in Pennsylvania related to the opioid epidemic. There are very few of us who could say that in one way or another, our family or friends haven't been touched by substance use disorder. So one of the things we see is the impact on children. Very often they're in and out of homes of grandparents or other relatives, friends, family. And really, some of them become far too old in their souls before their chronological age. And so for those parents who work at treatment programs, who are in recovery, you know, it can be a hard thing for them while they're focusing on their recovery. Without drugs or alcohol in their system, to really face the reality of what's happened in their family and how's it impacted their children.
That's really a double.
It's a double-edged sword.
Yeah.
And one of the contributing factors, one of the highest contributing factors of relapse, are stresses related to children and parenting. Because remember, oftentimes these are parents who are not as present physically or emotionally to their kids. And then when they're, you know, feeling better, and they're back to maybe more full-time parenting. We all know that without some of those special issues, parenting's really hard.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So one of the things our organization's done is we've developed a cross-systems program. It's called Families in Recovery, and it focuses on helping parents who are in recovery develop new parenting skills. How do you talk to your kids about your recovery? How do you introduce new techniques? Maybe some of these kids have never had real rules or boundaries in the family. They've kind of taken care of themselves or younger siblings. Lots of chaos comes along with substance use disorder.
I was going to say also because of the fact that a lot of times the children are young when things like this happen, and then they're raised by others, especially grandparents.
Especially.
Who are older, who have a different outlook on things than parents might have. Mm-hmm. So that, again, wow, that's really...
Yeah, it's a 7-week program.
Wow.
And we're very fortunate and very appreciative to have support from the Pennsylvania Department of Human Services. They have provided some funding to pilot this program statewide. And then because of great work of media and spreading the word, I'm happy to say we've had at least 10 different states outside Pennsylvania where agencies, and some of it have been universities or drug treatment courts, contact us and say, this is exactly what we need in our state. How can we be a part of this? Yeah, it's exciting.
So you're spearheading...
We are spearheading really a national program, I think.
That's wonderful.
Yeah.
And you've obviously, it's been well received.
It has been. There are researchers.
Have you gone through already 7 weeks?
I have gone through a training of the trainers.
Oh.
And it is now being piloted in many of the family centers throughout Pennsylvania. So we're knee-deep in gathering feedback and data collection and all of those things that go along with this process. But the bottom line is we really believe we're bringing something to the table here for the communities and the families in Pennsylvania. It's not going to be the magic fix of everything that happens in a family when there's an addiction issue and recovery process, because we all know that's long and sometimes it has lots of... Twists and turns along the way.
Right.
But we know that we're bringing something to the table that helps parents focus on their children in a new and different way.
So if someone wanted to find out about that, whether it was a person themselves or whether there's an organization, a church, you know, anybody, how would they do that?
You know, we're kind of old school at PFSA. We like to talk to people on the phone.
Oh.
So we have a website with all kinds of great information, and I'm sure we'll pass that along to your listeners. But what we'd most prefer is that people call us to talk about families in recovery, and we can be reached at 1-800-448-4906. And if someone calls between the hours of 7:30 a.m. and 4:30 p.m., I guarantee someone will answer the phone and we'll be happy to talk with them about the program.
Is there a cost for the program?
There is cost. There is. I would say it's pretty nominal compared to other programs. So we're happy to work with folks and kind of walk through what their needs are in terms of whether that's an agency administrator or whether that's a parent or someone in a parenting role who would like to, you know, attend one of the programs.
Where would they be held? For example, here in Northeast Pennsylvania, would they be able to be here, or would they have to travel someplace else in order to do that?
Well, what we hope to have are agencies throughout the communities that are actually providing it as a service. So just like, you know, many of the agencies that serve families and children. We have in Scranton the former EOTC, Outreach for Community Resources. Those folks are going to be hosting families in recovery. And as word spreads, you know, we have more and more agencies joining saying, hey, how do we get involved? How do we make that available for families in our communities?
And it's just an amazing thing when you think about it, because, again, you have the whole Commonwealth mm-hmm. that you're working with.
Yeah,
and there is just, it's not like it's just one community.
Correct.
This is everywhere.
Mm-hmm. It's a big state, and this is one issue that is having a negative impact on our families, and as a result of that, it's impacting the safety and well-being of our children.
Mm-hmm. Kudos. That's a big project to take on. But
we're excited.
You're an awesome woman.
We have an awesome team, and we have people throughout Pennsylvania who are strategic partners of ours. And, you know, it's great just to see good folks, good agencies, good community leaders all working together to do the right thing for kids.
And that's what the whole thing's about. Now, before we let you go, the last time we had you back, we had you in April.
Yes.
So are we already looking into the next part of the year as to what you're going to be involved with?
I believe so. You know, I think for us, we really want to expand the Families in Recovery. We want to launch and have dates set for a train-the-trainer model on that, which helps agencies actually, you know, offer the service. We want to keep doing a lot of good work with grandparents who are raising their grandkids. And we're excited to start a few new programs, support and education programs in targeted counties in Pennsylvania. We're happy to work with the members of the General Assembly. We had meetings last week looking at legislation and looking at where there are barriers for grandparents who are trying to raise their grandchildren. So I think that there will not be many days where we're not incredibly busy, and we're happy for that.
But April?
April, very, very busy. Child mm-hmm. Abuse Prevention Month. We will crisscross the state numerous times. Of course, the big event, April 3rd at the Capitol in Harrisburg, Main Rotunda, 10:30 a.m. And then we're also going to follow that up with another event in Pittsburgh. So we're trying to spread the blue throughout the Commonwealth.
I like that.
Yeah.
Spread the blue.
Yeah, we're spreading the blue. Yeah, different kind of Penn State blue. How's that?
Different kind.
Yeah. Yeah. So we're going to be out in Pittsburgh on April 10th for another awards ceremony there. Bringing key community leaders together, recognizing that it's not acceptable in this state to have 40 children killed because of abuse and neglect. It's not acceptable to have over 4,400 children be deemed abused in Pennsylvania. It's not
big
okay.
Number.
It's a large number, large number. We've got to do better because they deserve that.
Well, they have a good team on their side.
Thank you.
So now you're going to give our listeners an opportunity to find the website.
Yep. Come visit our website. It's pa-fsa.org. And remember, if you can't find what you're looking for there, there's a lot of information. Folks should never hesitate to give us a call at 800-448-4906.
Thanks again to Angela Little, the president and CEO of Family Support Alliance, for joining us today. And don't forget, their website is pa-fsa.org. And thanks to you for joining us as well here on Special Edition.
Thanks for listening to Special Edition, a weekly look at the issues in the news and the personalities shaping the stories. A production of Intercom Communications.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.